Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Last Friday, the federal court ruled that Malaysia Kini was guilty of contempt with regard to five readers' comments that were taken down 12 minutes after Kini, 12 minutes within Kini being advised of the questionable content. So now we're going to speak to Malaysia Kini's lead counsel, Datuk Malik Imtiaz Sarwar. Imtiaz, immediately after the court decision, you were quoted in the press as a warning against knee-jerk reactions to the summaries of the judgments. You said that the full grounds of the federal court rulings would have to be studied. So what would you say is your understanding now of how and why the judges arrived at the decisions they did?
Right. Well, the situation hasn't really changed. The grounds of judgment haven't been issued yet. So we're still left with just the summaries, which although, I mean, are fairly comprehensive, one wonders whether certain aspects may have been left out as not being key. So what I was trying to say was that, you know, it's obviously a disappointing judgment to many. But before we react to it, because as we've seen, there's always the possibility of sedition charges and other things, we should just wait and understand the full extent of the reasoning. So as things stand, it's still where it is.
Yeah, speaking of this of sedition, Imtiaz, of course, we already have news that Stephen Gunn and the Klang MP, Charles Santiago, are being investigated for sedition with regard to comments on the verdict. What happens? I mean, what is the Malaysian public to learn from this? Is it that the judiciary is above any kind of criticism? Is it not possible to make any comments?
Well, so there are two issues there. One is what is contempt, and that's exclusively within the domain of the judiciary. And the other is what is sedition, and that's really a matter of what the Sedition Act provides as being seditious. And as both of you know, we've never been very happy with the way the Sedition Act is framed, and you know that's why we've campaigned aggressively for it to be repealed. So it's pretty subjective when it comes to the Sedition Act. At least that's my view. And when it comes to contempt, then if you go by what case law there is, there are certain guidelines or certain definitions that we adhere to. And I think it's important to note that what Malaysia Kini was cited for contempt for was scandalizing the court, or scandalizing contempt, as we call it. Now, some other jurisdictions have already said that maybe not appropriate anymore. I think the UK has taken that position, whereas other jurisdictions, like Malaysia, still maintain that there's a need for it to ensure the integrity of the institution and to leave it to do what it does as an institution. So that's really the conundrum, and I think that's probably why some quarters are saying that there may be a need to have some sort of legislation to define more specifically what it is that is contempt. I would assume what it is that is seditious.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to ask you what do you understand to be then the reason that the fine was more than doubles, 2.5 times more than what the prosecutors had sought?
Yeah, well, I can only go by what the court ultimately said, because once the court handed down its judgment on liability and said that Malaysia Kini was guilty, and I'm happy to say that, you know, Stephen was absolved, we then made arguments in mitigation, and then we pointed out that from the outset, Malaysia Kini had taken a very cooperative stance. We accepted that the words were on their face contemptuous. We tendered an apology for having unwittingly allowed for it to happen. And we even exposed our inner workings to show them how it is that we use these filters and the artificial intelligence and the fact that we didn't moderate comments. So we said all of that, and we said that, you know, we think that the judgment itself is sufficient, or if not, then 30,000, because they have before them all evidence of Malaysia Kini's financial record, which obviously is not a for-profit sort of organization, as others might be. So when the counter was 200,000, we thought that seemed a bit high. And when the bench came out, they did say that they acknowledged everything that we said in mitigation, and they recognized it, and the fact that this was the first of its kind, the decision. But nonetheless, they felt that because the statements were so scandalous, and because they had concluded that Malaysia Kini was guilty, they had to send a clear signal out, and that's how we got the 500,000 imposed. That's all I can say, really, because that's all the court said when pronouncing that amount.
Imtiaz, you have on Twitter, suggested that we need to look at the Evidence Act and Section 114A, and we spoke earlier to Premier Chandran of Malaysia Kini about this as well, reminding us of the 2012 uproar over the amendments to the Act. Could you help us understand a little more from a legal standpoint, the complexities of this Evidence Act and that section of the Evidence Act?
Yeah, I mean, that section is unhappily worded, and I don't think anyone is very happy with it. I can't say the judges themselves are happy with it, because it was introduced to make it easier to sue people who were using blogs, hiding behind them to make statements that were, injurious. But the truth of it is, as we've seen from the majority judgment, unfortunately, the way the legislation has been framed, it allows for one view that the majority formed in this case, that as long as the presumption is invoked, you can attribute intention and knowledge. And that's what they said here. They said that we ought to have known. Well, first of all, there was a prima facie case because of the presumption. And secondly, we were not able to rebut that presumption because the truth of it is we should have known better. And if we could have filters to take out certain language, why couldn't we have filters to take out other language? I mean, leave aside the complexities of that. But the fact is that presumption was pivotal to the conclusion of the majority. Whereas when you look at the dissenting judgment, what the court said there was, well, yeah, okay, it gives rise to a presumption, but surely that's not enough to actually drive home on a beyond reasonable doubt standard a conclusion that Malaysia Kini acted intentionally, which was the linchpin of any contempt finding. And so there we have it. An unhappily drafted provision has allowed for what some are perceiving as being an unfair outcome. And so when I tweeted about it, I said, well, I think the best way to solve this is to get rid of it and go back to basic principles of proof.
Imtiaz, can I ask you about the importance of this verdict? What precedents do you think this could set for future cases? Prem mentioned that this is a case that has never been tried before, and this is one of the, setting a precedence here. Can you talk to us about the importance of this verdict?
Sure. As we argued in the federal court, as far as I'm aware, this is the first kind of its decision, I think, anywhere in the common law world. In other jurisdictions, what you do have is a situation where a court might order the removal of an offending item. And if the intermediary then says no, that's contempt. And that's understandable, it's a breach of a court order. But as far as I'm aware, it's the first time that a court has found an intermediary liable on the basis that it has. So the implication there is this. The majority formed the view that because we could have exercised some control, and in fact we did because we had a filter that sort of weeded out bad language, therefore it would follow that any platform or any intermediary that has that capability could also be found culpable. So in the arguments, we cited a very recent Indian Supreme Court decision where the primary wrongdoer was found guilty of contempt, but the intermediary, which was Twitter, was not. And the majority said, well, that case was distinguishable. In the summary, it's not clear why, but that's why I'm saying I'm waiting to read the judgment more fully to see what exactly the distinguishing features were. Because if it comes back to the intermediary having some sort of protective algorithm to make the comments more seemly, weeding out bad language, then I would think that any other intermediary in the same position could also be found culpable, which then means you either start moderating comments, which invites a whole world of pain when it comes to liability for defamation and other things, or you completely block comments, which is then counter intuitive, and it runs counter to the CMA, the Multimedia Act, which talks about no censorship. And in fact, it then undermines that code of conduct. And significantly, one of the things that the dissenting judgment picked up on, which doesn't seem to have found its way into the summary of the majority view, was that under the Media Act, the Communications and Multimedia Act, compliance with a code of conduct is a complete defense.
Okay.
And that's what we did. Yeah.
Malik Imtiaz, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate your insights explaining the legal side of things to us. We're going to take another quick break, but stay tuned to consider this.
We'll be right back.